nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
I'm going to start talking about a little bit about the thermodynamics of the voltage in batteries, okay? So, given the model that we have built until now, that we have even programmed until now, we have that the voltage of the battery corresponds to the to some potential that we have here. Here we call it the equilibrium potential. And then what we did is we just summed over all the losses. Okay? That you may have. Okay? We still haven't said where that comes from. Okay, there are many loss mechanisms that impart losses into the battery, but we still don't know where that comes from. Okay, and I want to start setting the framework so that you know where that comes from. And formally speaking, think of you have two phases at equilibrium, okay, where you have, say, the phase C, okay, in contact with the phase A through some interface that only allows exchange of heat, exchange of charge, okay, maybe exchange of volume. Okay, you want that to be exchanged between them until when? Until the system reaches equilibrium. Okay, I'm not intending to make this a review of thermodynamics, but the only thing we have to describe the system is the combined statement of the first and the second law. So in this case, we know that the total energy, this U, should not be confused with that U. Okay, this is the voltage of the battery. This is what in thermodynamics is called the internal energy. Okay, I tried to make a difference by giving it two little handles on the top. Okay, but at that point it's just I guess it's the problem when two fields meet each other, when one has defined its symbols and you bring another one that has its own symbols defined already. Okay, and well, you have two contributions. You have the contribution of heat, and you have any other work term that adds to the energetics of the system, okay? And the first approximation, we said the heat contribution as heat goes in and out of your battery material, you also have charge that could enter the system, okay? You can think of one of these guys, okay, one of these two halves, okay, where charge is enters or charge leaves the system, and as charge enters, think of it as the energy has to increase, right? Because we have to have perform some electrical work to bring that charge, say, from this side or from infinity, from wherever you want, and storing it in there, okay? That requires work, okay? The same you can think of, well, what about chemical work? These charges that I'm bringing, say, from this electrode to that electrode, okay, those charges have associated atoms or ions, if you may, so the same, depending on the chemistry, I will have to perform some chemical work also from bringing it from here to here. Okay, that is also a necessary requirement to define the energetics of the system. And of course, you can think of other work to a first approximation, that will be the basic stuff you can include, but you can also think of other terms like stress, for example. You can stress a battery, of course, right? And that should account also for the energetics of the system. Okay, you can apply if you want it, right? You can, and I don't know anyone has ever done that, right? But you can add magnetic fields. You can think of any other contribution that would account for the equilibrium state of those two phases, in this case, phase C and phase A, through my impermeable membrane. Okay? That's the idea. So, to try to detail a little bit more, in this case, the internal energy, say for system C, okay? Well, in this case, for using, in this case, the second law of thermodynamics, dQ corresponds to TdS, right, where in this case T is the temperature, and S is the entropy of the system. Okay, and if I wanted to account for charge, I need a product of variables, just like T and S, so that one of them is charge, and the product of that variable with its corresponding conjugate variable gives me units of energy. In this case, I have charge that has to multiply some variable that I'm going to call here phi or phi, right? So that here the voltage has units of energy per unit charge times charge gives me units of energy, so I can add that. Okay, and well, if I want to account for the chemical part, I would have to account for all the components, charge or not charge, that are entering and leaving the system. So I have mu I d and I. Okay, where, well, I should define it. Phi is the voltage. Q is the charge. Mu I is the chemical potential. And Ni is the concentration, is associated to the mass of species I. Okay? So if this charge, if this species is charged, I not only will have to, that will not only increment the energy of the system via this contribution, but also via this contribution, right? Because the charge somehow has to be coupled with the mass, with the concentration, in order to include both of them. They both contribute to the energetics of the system. And what we really want is be able to specify the voltage. Not only that, what we want, really, is to be able to calculate the voltage difference between phi of C and phi of A, right? There should be a voltage difference between both of them, right? Specifying with that the voltage of the couple, if you may. Okay, that's really what we would like to do. That's the game plan. Okay, and well, at that point, what we need to do is account for the fact that there are quantities that are conserved in the system, okay, and quantities that depend on each other. Okay, intuitively, we expect that if I have a component C at a temperature T sub C, and I put it in contact with a component A in at temperature TA, qualitatively we expect that when the system reaches equilibrium, the temperature of both of them have to be the same. Okay, that's what we qualitatively would expect. Qualitatively, we also expect that at equilibrium, something should happen to the concentrations, right? The mass should be exchanged between both phases, so that ultimately, chemical thermodynamics tells us that the chemical potential should be flat across the board. And shouldn't that mean also that the voltages should be flat across the board? Should it or should it not? If it's flat across the board, then we don't have a battery, right? Then we just have a solid that has a fixed voltage. So it doesn't matter what I attach to it, I will end up with the same potential. So the voltages have to be different. Something that happens during the thermodynamic description or the equilibrium, the energy exchange between both phases leads to a voltage difference of both phases. Okay, and again, I purposely put C and A as being cathode and anode, but you can think of having phase alpha 1 and phase alpha 2 in contact, also from a battery material, right? Defining with that a potential that those two phases will have. So there's something there that we need to account for. Okay? So I'm going to do it over here. So there is a coupling that actually makes that voltage develop, and it's through the composition of the system. If you think about it, if you look at a volume element of material, the charge associated with that element, okay, has to do, if I look at component in I, okay, this one has units of, think of it, it has units of moles, okay? And this one has two units of coulombs. So if that species I is charged, I have to multiply it by some factor that would give me units of charge in that system. Would you agree with that? So that means that I have to multiply it by Avogadro's number to give me the number of charge atoms that I have in the system, and I have to multiply by the electronic charge associated to the fact that this thing is charged. And because the ith species may have a different valence than other species, then I have to multiply by the valence Zi. Okay? So, and we already know what E times Na is, right? You guys remember that? What? Yes, this is Faraday's constant. Okay, so that means, well, I can do that for the ith species, well, or I can just call them 1, and I can do it Z, E, N, A, N, 2, plus, C2, C3, E, N, A, N, 3. Basically, just keep adding every single contribution to my equilibrium. Okay, so I have the total charge of the system is going to be given by the sum over all the ionic species times Faraday constant, okay, times the concentration associated, the number of moles associated to that contribution. Okay, this is what people refer to as a physical constraint. This relationship basically couples the charge part with the chemical part in the system. Okay? And, we have to somehow include it in there so that it gives us a different relationship, or a relationship that becomes useful to describe the system. Okay? So, I'm going to erase this. I will probably have to draw it again, but I need to flow that way. In fact, I'm gonna draw it in that corner one more time, because I need to go in that direction. So I have here, I have two faces. I have face C and face A, okay, that I want to have at equilibrium. What can we say about the total energy of the system? So if I have put face C and put it in contact with face A and I put walls so that no mass can be exchanged, right? Which you would expect in a battery, right? You don't want a leaky battery, okay? I don't want to heat up my battery, so I'm going to say no heat can be exchanged. I mean, it can still heat up internally, but I won't allow heat to leave this box, okay? And also, at equilibrium, right, I'm not running my battery, no charge can be exchanged. So what can I say? And of course, between these two, charge and mass and heat can be exchanged between them. So the total energy of the system, what can I say about it? I'm sorry, what? It's zero. So if this has some number UA and this one has a number UC, you think the sum should always be zero? What you're saying is that delta U, right, the what's going in and out, that I agree with you, that has to be zero. Okay, but what can I say about the total energy of the system? I'm sorry, what? Yes, it's a constant, right? Because no energy can be exchanged, then the total energy, this is a constant. Okay? And that becomes a very important relationship. I'm going to put it up here again. The total energy of the system, that has to be conserved. Okay? I basically put walls surrounding it so the system will reach equilibrium but only exchanging energy between them. Okay? Now, what can I say about the entropy of the system? If the system is at equilibrium, do you expect that the total entropy will change? So I have total entropy. Right, the second law tells us that at equilibrium, either the entropy is conserved or away from equilibrium, the entropy increases. Right? We're not away from equilibrium, right? But we construct it so that the system is always at equilibrium. Okay? So what can we say about the entropy of the system? It's a constant, right? We can say it's a constant, so that means that the entropy of the of section C should be the same as the entropy of component A. What about the total charge of the system? Do you expect that if I put walls so that no charge can be exchanged for the charge to go in and out? Do you expect this number to change? No, right, so. I still have one more. Per every component, for the ith component, I should have that component one, I'm sorry, section, now let's just do it again. NT of component I should basically, the total mass for that component, that particular component should be always remain there. Okay, so for component ith, and the same for for section A, for face A. Okay, this imposes constraints because they're telling us that mass is conserved, charge is conserved, entropy is not changing at equilibrium, and energy is conserved. Okay? And this relationship that we wrote here should apply for every phase, for phase C and for phase A. So I can, in principle, apply these relationships to that, and that's what I want to do. Okay, anyway, I don't need this anymore. It was just for introducing it. Okay, so I'm going to keep that. I'm going to make the simplifying assumption. I can do this for as many components as I want, but I'm just going to keep it for I equals 2, okay, for where I have a binary system, simply because it just makes things easier to develop. But you can do this for 10, for whatever many you want. Okay, so I know that for, and I should have put these over here. Okay, that for component C, the first law is written as okay, and I can say the same thing for phase A. Oh, and I should put here C's and A's. Okay, that's just a lot of chalk, but it's basically copying this one and pasting it here and changing the A's for Q's. Okay, or the A's for C's or the C's for A's. Okay, and well, what can I say about it? The first thing I can say is say this. The total energy is conserved. So if that's true, then I can take that in there and say, well, if I take the differential of this expression on both sides, that means that 0 equals duc plus dua, which I have right, happen to have over there. Okay? And I'm going to erase this. I don't need this anymore. Okay, or, yeah, and if I put it in there, then I have, it becomes, oh, and of course, let's just do it in steps. So I have TCDSC plus TADSA plus PhiCDQC plus PhiADQA plus mu1CDN1C plus mu1ADN1A. Plus mu one, am I doing this? No, mu two, C D N two C, plus mu, what is the other one? Mu two A D N two A. Okay, that's basically the whole thing added together, and that's equal to a big fat zero over here. Okay. Well, I want to include that one now. What I can say in this line is that if this is constant, that means if I take the differential, apply the differential operator to both sides, then I have that dSC has to be equal to minus dSA. Okay, for every fluctuation on the entropy on the C phase, it should be balanced by a fluctuation in the A phase at equilibrium. So that means that I can replace dSA by minus dSC and get okay. I can do the same for these contributions. Okay. I can say that at equilibrium, the total charge of the system is constant, which means that a fluctuation in charge from the C side, from C phase C, will be balanced, right? Will induce a reaction on the other component. Okay, so that it balances the charge, right? Basically, whatever charge I gain, the other one will lose, okay? Just to keep the equilibrium running. So I can do the same thing here, and I can replace dQA by minus dQC. Okay? And I can do the same thing for each of these in a prepared basis. I'm just going to do one. Okay, for a binary component and a multi-component system, because each component I cannot lose, the ith component will remain constant. Basically, if I move an ion from one side and put it in the other case, the total number of ions of that species will remain. Okay, so that means that I can replace, in this case, dNIC should be equal to minus dN I A, okay, which then allows me to group these in pairs. Okay, and the whole thing is equal to zero. Okay. Without introducing the constraint on the other side of the board, we can already say that since this zero has to be maintained for every differential change in entropy, charge, and mass, that means that each of these terms should be equal to zero independently at all times to maintain equilibrium. Okay? Which means, and this is a result we already know intuitively, that when we put two phases, two electrochemically active phases in contact, the temperature will change until they reach an equilibrium temperature. Okay? Temperature has to be flat across the board, right, if it has to be equilibrium. If the chemical part and the electrical part vary independently from each other, then that means that at equilibrium, the voltage on one side should be equal to the voltage on the other side. Okay? Basically, the voltage should be flat across the board. Okay? And that at equilibrium, in a per component basis, the chemical potential should be the same. It should be flat across the board. Basically, you can have one side to be very rich in component 2 and the other one very depleted in component 2, provided that this relationship is satisfied. Basically, equal chemical potential does not imply flat compositions, okay, or uniform compositions. It only means the chemical potential has to be uniform across the whole thing, okay? This is without including this constraint, okay? But if I include this constraint, okay, let's just say, now I'm going to say, for that system, I'm going to include that additional constraint, and that will change the relationship between the different phases. And, let's see, I don't need these relationships anymore, so I'm going to erase them. So I can do it right here next to it. And then we'll include it in. Okay? Then, if this relationship is true, and you believe me it was true, this goes from I equals 1 to n the total number of species. That means that dq has to be equal okay. Basically, I managed to just link fluctuations in composition to fluctuations in charge. Okay, now they're linked to each other. Okay, and, well, this will happen in upper, overall in the system, right? So I can say now, okay, and I can do this for component C. It won't matter because it's just right there. Okay, and well, I can do that for the, put a C here as well and replace it over there. And let's see if I can do it here. I'm going to ignore this term since this term has already been solved. I just want to include that term now. So I have now that zero, assuming that the system is occurring at constant temperature, is going to be phi C minus phi A M. Okay. Plus, well, in this case, what do I have over there? Okay. Oh, did I do it wrong? Yes. Oh, no. It's one. One, I always get confused with those. Okay, and well, I'm not going to go over the algebra there, but what you will find is that if you bring this terms over here, okay, and regroup, what you will find is that at equilibrium, basically you have that mu 1 of say C plus C phi F has to be equal to mu, this is on the cathode side, mu A plus Z phi F on the anode side. Basically, you will have a shift in equilibrium, the same on the other one, mu 2C plus Z phi F, and this is 1, and this is 2. Okay, and or if you prefer it, not write it like that, because that's a lot of carrying around. We can define a new quantity. And where am I defining this? Oh, let's just go over here. I can define a new quantity that I'm going to call the electrochemical potential. Which is going to be called for the ith component, is going to be the chemical potential, okay, of that ith component plus Zi F times phi of that component, okay? And of course, this is C, I would have to do that, right? This quantity tells you that at equilibrium for a system that is constrained by the fact that the system has that the ions have a charge or that the chemical components have a charge, means that at equilibrium, the electrochemical potential of, say, component C has to be equal to the electrochemical potential, the same component, for phase A. Okay? I'm gonna call this new equilibrium. Okay? Or if you prefer, if I make those substitutions, I will have then that mu 1c minus mu 1a has to be equal to z phi a minus times f c f phi a minus phi c. Okay? Or if you prefer, put it one step back. That there's going to be a chemical potential difference for, say, component 1 that is going to be equal to ZF times
a voltage difference
between them. At equilibrium, the electrochemical potentials are uniform across the system, provided that there's a chemical potential difference between them that is being balanced out by a built-in voltage of the system. Okay? Graphically, that would mean if I plot it across, and here I have, say, this side, I have phase C, and on this side, I have phase A. It means that I can have my chemical potential to be very high up there and very low down here. Okay? But the voltage should be such that it should balance that out. So that if I make that sum, okay, it should be flat across the board. Okay. Basically, the constraint that we impose, or that it's imposed by the fact that the chemistry is a charged chemistry, forces the definition of a new quantity, and this is what people use in the electrochemistry literature, a quantity called the electrochemical potential. And well, in this case, the wiggly symbol really corresponds to it's arbitrary. To what we know already in material science by the chemical potential, the chemical part. But now that it's charged, I have to account for the electrical contribution. So when you have an electrode material and you measure the voltage with respect to some reference, right? So you measure, say, the voltage of C with respect to some arbitrary anodic material A, and you put your voltmeter there, what you're measuring is this drop across it. Okay, which you can relate it to a chemical potential difference between both phases, okay, that will want, or ultimately what it wants is to find the combination that gives the electrochemical potential flat. If you allow electrons to be exchanged so that difference, electrical difference, is perturbed, then also the chemical potential difference will stop happening, right? So if you have two systems where the chemical potential is flat, it shouldn't be surprising then that there's no voltage difference between them either. Okay? Because you have allowed mass and charge exchange so that it becomes flat all over again. Okay? This, at equilibrium, this is the equilibrium of the system. So in this case, this delta phi really corresponds to the voltage U that we have been talking about these last few weeks, right? It corresponds to the voltage difference that results from putting one material in contact with another one, okay? And if the material is truly at equilibrium, it'll develop a flat voltage across, which is very convenient because that's what you would want for your application, right? You want really your voltage to be flat across the board until the system completely discharges, and then it will drop to zero, okay? That's what you would want, ideally, okay? So I will talk more about this on applications on this to real material systems on Thursdays. And if you don't have any questions, I'm just going to stop right here. Okay. Thank you, guys. See you Thursday.